Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. I am Adam Weinrib. Like foul territory, we have double-barreled multiple guests today. Unlike foul territory, we don't have a single AJ Pierzynski in sight. Robert Murray is out. We will get him back next week, and we appreciate everybody joining us. But starting the show, I've got Emma Langan with me to talk about the postseason to date. And then we'll be welcoming on my mortal enemy and also good friend, Ian McMillan, who you know from SI Betting, who is a Toronto Blue Jays fan and an extremely Canadian man. So in case you were thinking, oh, he's going to duck the Yankees getting eliminated by the Jays, probably not going to talk about it at all. He's too prideful. He's a fraud. To that, I say, no, Mom, I'm not going to duck it. I'm not going to ignore it. I am going to talk about my team losing. But first, Emma and I are going to talk about the most disappointing, most exciting teams and playoff X factors that have yet to materialize, but certainly could. We appreciate everybody joining us at 3 p.m. Eastern. This is a Thursday instead of a Wednesday show. We'll be back on Wednesday next week. You can read us and much more on fansided.com/baseball-insiders and get us right to your inbox by subscribing to the Moonshot. Emma, thank you for joining me, and thank you for helping me, I guess, cope. Cope is the word people like to use with staying up late to watch my team absolutely eat paint and then come on and talk about the postseason picture.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, I may not be AJ Pierzynski or Robert Murray, but, you know, I'm going to try my best to be the best Emma Langan I can be. And, you know, I'll admit I was a little nervous about having to do the show with you today. Just, you know, I'm like, I'm trying to tread lightly here because I know my audience.
I think there's no need to tread lightly. Maybe, I don't know. Look, the thing that people keep doing this to me, and first of all, I appreciate, I like when people check in. I like when people say, I'm sorry, I feel bad. That's totally fine. The thing that I got to get over personally is when people just reach out and they're like, woof, that was bad or whatever. Like, man, we look terrible. It's like, yeah, we do. We do look terrible. And I don't have much to add to this conversation. Like, you're coming to me to be like, I didn't like that. Like, yeah, I didn't like it either, man. People are like, what do we do? I was like, I don't know. It's 4 months from now till we'll see these people again. Can we wait to do the diagnostic work? But obviously Ian will dance over the carcass while the body is still cold. So we will, or still warm, whatever it is. I guess the body gets colder. It's warm when it dies. So I guess still warm, but we'll have Ian on to do some of that. We went a little, you and I personally did not go back and forth this week, but there was a little Yankees fan, Pirates fan, back and forth kerfuffle. Certain Yankee fans of a certain age saying, you know, nobody has it, where every year we get eliminated by our rivals. You know, again, the regular season is rendered meaningless by this postseason performance. And you and many other Pirates fans were like, oh, the postseason would be getting to the postseason would be a very memorable year. We would hold reunions for that. So I will definitely give you that it's a different kind of pain, but I do think the pain of irrelevance is much, much worse.
It's a different kind of pain. Yankees fans' pain is one that I cannot relate to whatsoever, nor is it one that I really have much sympathy for, to be quite honest. But I mean, look, it's either we have 27 rings or no one's ever had it worse. Like, it cannot be both. Pick one. You can't pick whichever one works for you at any given time. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. While maybe I'm not dancing on the warm carcass or whatever you said earlier,
I don't even know what I said earlier. One of those two for sure.
Riding the dragon. I don't know. I think that we, you know, there is a little part of me that was maybe a little, maybe not pleased, but I wasn't that upset that the Yankees lost.
That's mind blowing to me. I thought you were going to be supremely bummed, but hey, you know, the end of another Yankee season. We saw a lot of people not remembering the end of the Yankee season quite so fondly. I think almost everybody has the right to talk smack, except for Red Sox fans. We eliminated you like last week. So Red Sox fans Red Sox fans had the funniest reaction to the Yankees losing that I've seen them have this year, where they kept running back like, you didn't beat anybody. Your competition wasn't good. The competition was you. Like, you're diminishing your own roster. And then they would genuinely, you would call them on it. You'd be like, you're diminishing your own roster. And they would be like, we are. Yeah, we weren't good. It's like, okay, well, I can't argue with someone who's like, my team was bad. You beat my team. Therefore, you're bad. Like, you got to wear one at some point. You can't be, if the Yankees fans were cheering on the Blue Jays for doing their dirty work and knocking the Red Sox out, I don't think Red Sox fans would be quite so gracious. But here we are. We're both on the couch, whether that couch is in Cancun or Swampscott has yet to be determined, but neither of us are playing anymore. Plenty of teams are still in the mix, though, and plenty of teams are still alive. In fact, only the wild card participants and the New York Yankees have been eliminated. All the other DSs are still active. We've got a game five tomorrow. We've got two NL game fours. That gives us plenty of opportunities to be impressed. And I wonder, after watching these opening rounds and knowing who is still alive, who is the most impressive team of the postseason so far in your view?
I've got to go with the Milwaukee Brewers. And that is because, I mean, I think that you could really kind of go a bunch of different ways with this. All the teams have been impressive in some way or another. I mean, I really like the Mariners this year as well, but I think the Brewers have just impressed me so much because, again, I feel like I say this all the time, but you look at this Brewers lineup, no one is scaring me in that lineup. It's not, you don't have, sorry, an Aaron Judge or a Vladdy Guerrero. Like, it's just, it is a team of not great, but really good players. And they have managed to do kind of what a lot of small market teams, Pittsburgh Pirates, have not been able to do. And they have been able to assemble a roster of decently good players who get better as they progress with the organization. They get better. And, you know, the biggest thing for the Brewers was supposed to be, well, you know, yeah, they're good. They're fundamentally sound. They do a lot of little things right. But, you know, they don't have any power. Well, then the last game happened and, oh, there's the power. So it's like, wow, all right. So what can't this Brewers team do in the playoffs? I think now if you can see that power from the middle of their lineup a little bit more consistently, then I think this suddenly becomes a much scarier team. But I will say that they're the ones who have impressed me in the sense that they probably surprised me the most in a positive way.
I feel that I'm surprised that they went down the way they did yesterday. Of course, it went down to the wire and it was a one run save. The Brewers are never going to lose a game where they just surrender, white flag it on the road, even at a hostile environment like Wrigley. Last night's Dodger game obviously flew under my personal radar because I was watching another team play poorly on the East Coast. But that team up until game three of the DS was playing championship level baseball, was playing the baseball that Dodgers fans had been waiting for a full 162. They were the anti-Yankees. They didn't play up to their ability all year, slotted Roky Sasaki into the ninth inning, slotted Tyler Glasnow into the bullpen, found a way to not just survive, but thrive under pressure. They look like the 2000 Yankees to me. They looked like a team that was running on fumes for a good portion of the season. And the 2000 Yankees did it right before October started, left everybody questioning them. Under 90 wins, not the 2000 Yankees, not the Dodgers. And then as soon as the bright lights shone, that team wasn't really even that tested throughout the postseason, and they dispatched the Mets in five when they got to the Fall Classic. The Dodgers went to what I thought would be the most hostile environment in the entire postseason and laid the Phillies flat twice, erased a 3-0 deficit in the sixth inning. Not easy. You can say it's easy because the Dodgers are inevitable, but that's an unenviable task. And then played a tightrope ball game until the end of game two and pushed that lead to the point where they were even comfortable bringing Blake Treinen in for the ninth. That was a mistake. They should not have done that, but they were able to do it and survive because of the cushion they had created. And Will Smith, an injured guy coming through in a clutch opportunity for the Dodgers. Where have we seen that before? So they are my NL champions, my World Series champions until proven otherwise. I didn't pick them before October started, but after seeing what I saw for the first round and a half, they are playing like a championship team, and they are playing like the regular season, and all the narratives baked in just did not matter at all. Now, there was a world where they were the most depressing playoff team, based on the regular season bullpen and based on Mookie Betts losing 25 pounds and the strange vibes of almost the entirety of their regular season. Instead, they have defied those odds. But there are plenty of disappointing teams, many of whom are now gone and are, in fact, quite depressing. Who stands out to you there?
I mean, I don't know if it's a cop-out to pick, you know, one of the first eliminated teams, but I mean, I've got like a team like Cleveland. I think that it had to be so first of all, it was, I mean, to give them credit, so impressive what they did to up to the end of the year. You know, they were 15 and a half games back. They surged back. Of course, they were helped quite a bit by the Tigers really falling off a cliff at the end of the season as well. But they make it in to the playoffs. And then you look at just, again, you look at this roster and they're, you know, they're designated hitter up until he got hit in the face by Tarek Skubal was David Fry, who was hitting like 200. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's your designated. How is this a playoff team? And so I think that they were a little bit like a team like that, a team like the Reds as well. I feel like I'm really dumping on the state of Ohio today. I don't mean to do that, but I mean like the Reds as well. It's kind of like, maybe I look at a team like the Reds for a little bit of hope as like a fan of another small market team, like, ah, this is how it could be. And then they got to the playoffs, immediately just got steamrolled, got exposed by the Dodgers. It was very clear one of these things is not like the other. And so, but the Reds, I don't consider as depressing because it was like, I don't think this was a playoff team yet. They weren't really expected to be. So I think they're okay. But for me, it's Cleveland because they were in a position at the trade deadline where they could have, and many people up until the deadline expected them to just sell and be like, all right, scrap it. You know, Steve, how shocked were we all that Stephen Kwan was still a Cleveland Guardian at the trade deadline? I mean, it was crazy. And then it looked like, wow, we're going to go prove everyone wrong and we're going to prove that we were right to keep him and to hang on to all these pieces. And it looked like they were going to do it. And then they got to the postseason and against a very shaky Tigers team, and they just crumbled, fell apart. It's just, it's depressing. It's embarrassing, I think, but that I got to go Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about a stunner. That depressing Detroit Tigers are still here and Tarek Skubal has not been winning his starts. It's hard to fathom, but that's where we're at. All right. Most disappointing teams in October: Guardians, Reds, Cincinnati Bengals. Sorry, not trying to crap on Ohio. Just it's turning the Cleveland Browns. It's turning out that way. Dylan Gabriel, Joe Flacco. Cleveland's a great pick. I'm just going to get my little bit of Schadenfreude out and say the Boston Red Sox gave away a chance to go to the ALCS in the World Series. I firmly believe that. Even in their undermanned state, even without Roman Anthony, who they claimed might be back by the ALCS, all they had in their path was a rival team in the New York Yankees that has not beaten them in a playoff series since 2003 up until the wild card series. They had a Toronto Blue Jays team that they've been waiting for the run differential to matter all year. Like at some point, the Blue Jays are going to stop playing over their skis. They're going to stop getting contributions. Like Ernie Clement looks great until he has to face Garrett Crochet. That's what all Red Sox fans were telling me. Crochet was dominant. Aroldis Chapman was dominant. The Red Sox took game one at Yankee Stadium. And Alex Cora started messing around, started doing what we hate when the Yankees do, getting cute, taking Brian Baio out after 28 pitches. Jaron Duran can't catch a fly ball. That's the only reason the Yankees win game one. It's the only reason Aaron Judge's batting average is game two. It's the only reason why Aaron Judge's batting average is where it is. And then game three, of course, the Red Sox defense lets them down. I don't think the Red Sox would have won the World Series this year, especially not without Roman Anthony healthy, but I would have had a hard time picking anyone in the American League field confidently over the Red Sox as long as they got past the stupid little wild card series hurdle against the Yankees. And I firmly believe Alex Cora helped give that series away and the Red Sox defense did them no favors either. I don't think Red Sox fans are giving their team enough credit. I've been where they are. I've been disappointed by my team in October. I've gotten upset and I've said, we weren't that good anyway. And I've thrown in the towel. The Red Sox were better than the Red Sox fans are acting like they were right now. And if they had gotten past that series, they might have made some noise against Toronto. More noise than the Yankees made against Toronto, for sure. Now, biggest... Well, yeah.
You had Cora also, who kept trying to move the goalpost towards the end of the season. Like, well, no, we weren't actually trying to make the playoffs. So if we don't make it, it's not that big of a deal. But oh, now, no, we made it. Yeah, that was our goal this entire time. Anything short of that would have been a failure. It's like, no, you can't just massage the narrative to make it fit, you know, what makes you look good. Because either way, Alex Cora, I'll agree with you there, does not look good.
No. Roman Anthony envisioned the first at bat of the ALCS, and then they lose a couple games, and the media is like, how are your playoff hopes? He's like, whoa, playoff hopes. We're not talking about that shit. It's like, you leaked a private message to Roman Anthony, so we all heard it, but now we can't talk about it. Unfortunately, this is now an Alex Cora podcast. I've got seven more questions, a giant stack of papers about Alex Cora. I know I touched on something that is your biggest remaining X factor that is yet to rear its head in the postseason as we head towards game five of the other American League series. So I'm going to shine some light there for you.
Yeah, I think Tarek Skubal is a big one. I mean, it might sound obvious for, you know, obviously he's there. He's the Tigers' best player. He's probably going to win another Cy Young. Everything about this season has been fantastic for him. But you look at his record, his recent record in particular against the Mariners, and his career, his resume, it really kind of lacks that defining postseason victory. And obviously he is now, he's made three starts against the Mariners this year. He's made one in this series in game one, and then he, or game two, whenever it was. And then now he's lost all of them. Even if he wasn't credited with the loss, the Tigers lost all of them. I mean, they all kind of tell the same story too, that it's not all on him, because you need the Tigers hitters to actually give you some run support. But at the same time, I think like he could make an early statement. He could energize the offense, like really quiet the opposing crowd, and I think really set the tempo that way in game five. He'll have that opportunity. Now he just needs to take it and run with it, because I think that, again, maybe it's unfair to put so much of the pressure on him, but at the end of the day, when you're a team's best player like that by far, I mean, it comes with the territory. And I think that he, again, the story of his season series against the Mariners has been fine. He's been fine. He hasn't been bad. He's been good enough, but good enough isn't good enough in the playoffs. And so I think that, you know, and it's clear by now, he cannot rely on the Tigers' bats to come in clutch for him, especially during the playoffs. So I think now you have to hope that he can pull it off in game five. So it maybe sounds like, well, duh, of course, Tarek Skubal's their X factor. But I mean, if you think about it, this could be a defining moment for him in the postseason.
Absolutely. And he is headed on the road, but not necessarily to a place that I would call hostile, a spot that is going to be anxious, grade A nervous for a deciding game five. This was supposed to be a Mariners run. We appreciate everyone who's joined us. We appreciate Emma's fans for joining us. Please come back next, and we'll give you more advance notice when we're going to have Emma next time as well. We appreciate everyone joining us for this portion of the show. One last note before I bring on Ian. Emma, I know that, you know, we were going to talk biggest worry that hasn't reared its ugly head yet. This one felt a little obvious. We touched on it earlier. Just to note that before we talk a little bit about the Dodgers bullpen, Tanner Scott has been substituted on this roster. He ain't even on the roster anymore. He had a lower body incision yesterday. I'm not going to dig into that any further because I don't want to, but he's no longer a factor until the World Series at the earliest. Sasaki, Clayton Kershaw, garbage time. They've managed to make it work, but how long can they manage to make it work?
Well, you know, it's funny because you frame it as biggest worry that hasn't reared its ugly head. Well, it kind of did rear its ugly head last night against the Phillies. I mean, and it was really in the least, you know, expected way. I think, you know, everyone could look at this bullpen and just kind of hold your breath and think that's the biggest thing standing in the way of the Dodgers winning another World Series this year. But I would not have expected Clayton Kershaw to be the one that would just kind of fall apart. Now, granted, he came in, he was playing from behind. They were down 3-1, I believe, when he came in. And then he fell apart. His command was off. Of course, Schwarber is going to Schwarber, especially in the playoffs. But I mean, certain things you can't control. But honestly, I think that you talked about, oh, they even went to Blake Treinen. Well, at that point, by the time they went to Treinen, the game was already lost. I think that, and for, you know, this bullpen, I mean, again, who would have known, who would have thought that the biggest, you know, the most important piece of this Dodgers bullpen was going to be Roky Sasaki, just how we all drew it up. But again, like, even if Tanner Scott had been available, I wouldn't have trusted him either. I think that you've now, like, there's one by one, each of your reliable pieces has become unreliable. And I think now when you look at what Kershaw did, and you hate it for him because this can't be how it ends for him, I think that that has to at least somewhat light a fire under the Dodgers to be like, okay, we're not going to let this be the last time that he is on the mound in a Major League Baseball game. But at the same time, it's like, ooh, we saw what can happen now. We saw what can happen. So I think it has started to rear its ugly head. But and now that, you know, the toothpaste is out of the tube, we'll see if they can get it back in.
And letting this get to game five on the road would be a disaster, even if they win it, because you really do not want to have to use Shohei Ohtani again in this series. You definitely don't want to fly cross country. And yeah, Clayton Kershaw, an act of bravery, you know, being a good teammate, soaking up the damage for the rest of his roster, but certainly did not make me believe that he would be a weapon moving forward, and certainly a downer. Like, if his last act is selfless as a major leaguer, sure, it's fitting, but it's not exactly the kind of thing that you want to tip your cap to and put in the highlight montage. Well, Emma, thank you for joining me and talking me through this. Now, unfortunately, I have to go through what I can only describe as the lower body incision of podcasting, bringing my friend Ian McMillan on to gloat about the Toronto Blue Jays. He has earned it. But Emma, we'll have you on again soon, and appreciate again, we'll give everybody an earlier heads up when Emma's coming on so that everyone knows when to watch instead of joining midway through.
Thank you. Hang in there, buddy.
Yeah, it's going to work. All right, bring it on, Ian McMillan, to the show now. And wow, that's what a surprise. I thought he was going to be wearing Maple Leafs gear, perhaps even a tasteful blazer. But no, it's Blue Jays top to bottom. That's, I think I see a division champs and my favorite Jays throwback hat. I really do like that. The first time I ever went to Rogers Center, it was Pat Henkin pitching and they were wearing those hats. So that makes me feel a little bit better after what I watched last night. But the floor is yours. I was going to, if you were nice enough to bring me on to your show before the playoffs started, I think I held up well. I told you the Yankees deserved to be the third favorite in the American League, and they, you know, they were the fourth team to survive in the American League, and they've been killed by one of the teams with better betting odds. But you deserve this victory lap. Game three was a harrowing experience for you, I know, but game four was much, much better.
Yeah, listen, I've claimed before that you are the most reasonable Yankees fan, so I'm not going to come in on here and gloat too much. I think me just wearing this hat and the shirt is gloating enough. And honestly, I think if we would have won in game three, I think it'd be a different story. I think I'd be dancing right now. But that game three caused enough nerves for me that it's more of a sigh of relief right now as a Jays fan than it is anything else. So, yeah, it's, I mean, there was a lot riding on this series, I think, more than even just a playoff spot, because, you know, I think the Jays and Yankees rivalry is becoming a lot bigger than it has been in the past. So it's nice to have this as a Jays fan in our back pocket for the next number of years until next time we see you guys in the playoffs.
Which could happen. It's a decidedly weird series because anyone who watched regular season ball this year knows that the Red Sox and Jays both beat up on the Yankees to the point that the Yankees and Jays finished with the same regular season record and lost home field advantage because the head-to-head was so lopsided. And the Jays earned that. The Jays did so much damage, especially at the Rogers Center, that you know, it was hard to predict that the Yankees would get past both of these AL East rivals to make a playoff run, let alone one of them. I was hesitant to pick the Yankees to move past the Red Sox. And then, like we detailed earlier, sort of an error-filled games two and three for the Sox, head-scratching pitching decisions, desperately Alex Cora desperately trying to claw to get game two. And when he didn't, he was like, oh boy, okay, Connolly early it is. That's my lottery ticket. And Cam Schlittler did something absolutely absurd. But the Jays had the edge over the Yankees all year. But before the series, you had a lot of people just sort of blindly penciling the Yankees into the ALCS after the way they advanced past the best of three. And I thought that was, you know, I was encouraged by what the Yankees had done and how they closed September, but I definitely didn't think like, oh yeah, okay, they're past all their issues now. The bullpen is sorted. They're going to take it to Toronto. personally, I thought the Yankees would lose game one behind Luis Gil and Max Fried would come out and be much better. They'd split the two on the road and then have a shot to win it at home, more than likely go to five, and we would see what they were made of on the road. Instead, they lost game one as expected, and then Max Fried had a horrific start in game two. And despite their best efforts to give you a scare in game three, this one was pretty much done and dusted. A split at home was no longer good enough because that game two was such a massacre. When did you, I mean, I know game three was a little bit bizarre for you and maybe threw off your overall impression of the series, but going into that, I guess going into the series, what did you expect rationally and irrationally?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a betting guy, so I'm always going to rely on the odds. From a, you know, from an unbiased perspective and a biased perspective, I thought the Yankees were going to win, to be honest, because the I trust the betting market, and the market had them what they're like minus 170 favorites or minus 160 favorites. The Yankees were like pretty significant favorites. And also for the teams I cheer for, we never have anything nice. Nothing ever good happens to me as a sports fan. So I was like, we're going to lose this in heartbreaking fashion, which is why game three affected me so much, because I was like, oh, that's the heartbreak I was going to experience. Oh, being up 6-1 in a sweet clinching game and then losing that. Oh, here comes the heartbreak. I mean, Toronto fans have had it tough between the Maple Leafs and Blue Jays for blowing leads. Everyone remembers the 8-1 game against the Mariners in the wild card round a few years ago. Obviously, if you're a hockey fan, you know of all the blown leads the Leafs have had. But on top of that, even more on top of me being a Toronto sports fan, is I'm also an Atlanta Falcons fan, who obviously own the biggest. When you think of an example of a team blowing a big lead, you think of 28-3 in the Super Bowl. So I've been through my blown leads. I've been through my heartbreak. And I, you know, we still have a long way to go for some Blue Jays heartbreak. So, I thought that was it in game three when it was up 6-1, and then blowing that. And then I thought we were going to lose two straight. So that's why, like, I'm obviously very happy. I'm very excited for this, but like, I do kind of wish we won in three, because now I feel bad, because all day yesterday I was saying this is over, we're going to blow it, this is what my teams do. I bet big on the Yankees to come back and win the series and to win last night as an emotional hedge. I should have just trusted the guys. This Blue Jays team does feel like a different team. I know team of destiny might be kind of an overused term, but these guys got heart. You can see it, like the way, you know, Vlad Guerrero, like diving from halfway between third base and home plate, flying to get in that run in game three. These guys obviously get along. There's a ton of team chemistry. It's something I'm not really used to seeing in the teams that I cheer for. So, I thought this certainly could have been the year. But if you told me, if you would have asked me before the series who wins, I would have said the Yankees, to be honest.
I had the Yankees in four mentally entering the series, like, sacrificing that first one, thinking Fried would come out looking not only, competent. Let's say competent, like better than he did, workable. I thought they would win that baseball game. They did not. And the things I came away most impressed by, I mean, obviously, there's one big overarching one that I'll turn to in a second, but the way that they made the defensive lapses in game three into momentary lapses, like Addison Barger drops the pop-up, weird diving play in right field by Santander that scoots all the way past him. And the Yankees or any other doomed team would let that linger, would let that carry into game four and maybe beyond. We were told this was an anomaly and an aberration. The Blue Jays wouldn't do this again. And then the Blue Jays just made sure they wouldn't do it again. They did shake it off immediately. The two strike hitting was so impressive all series. And not just from guys like Ernie Clement and Miles Straw and the guys who use, of course, because they shorten up their swings. So they're able to just poke singles through the hole or whatever. No, Anthony Santander with the 11 pitch at bat in the second inning on Cam Schlittler. You know, what did it do any damage in the moment? No, but it was a reminder that, hey, 99 is not enough. Like the sinker, not enough to get past us. We're not the Red Sox. We're not fooled by this. We can keep at-bats going. And then on top of everything, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who you mentioned, is a superstar. And when you get to the playoffs, you need your superstars to play like superstars. And he was a guy who, in a smaller sample size, had looked a little bit like playoff Aaron Judge in these little two-game wildcard series. You know, he would go 1-for-7. The tiniest samples ever. You can't make a snap judgment on that, but also baseball is about these kinds of judgments. So I didn't listen to a lot of Toronto sports radio entering this series, but I'm sure it was hey, you know, Vladdy's got to be Vladdy. Does he have that in him? Yep. You know, what is he? And then he stomps on the Yankees in games 1, 2, and 3. You can't get him out. He's got like a 1600 OPS. What was it like watching him sort of obviously culminate in yelling "the Yankees lose" with David Ortiz? But what was it like watching him imprint so heavily on this series?
Crazy. Brings a tear to my eye. Especially, I mean, I don't want to keep relating things to the Maple Leafs, but I think there are a lot of comparisons you can make between the two Toronto teams, because that's what the Maple Leafs have missed in the postseason. That's why they consistently lose in the playoffs, because Austin Matthews is average at best in the playoffs. Mitch Marner always stunk in the playoffs. That's why they let him go to Vegas this offseason. To see a Toronto athlete, and not only just a Toronto athlete, a guy who's now signed here for 14 years, Toronto is always kind of the ugly duckling, especially in baseball, because like guys don't really want to play in Canada. It's cold up here, all that stuff. So to have a superstar on our team that signed for the next 14 years, clearly loves to play for the team, loves the city, and then delivers in the postseason, like you can't ask for anything more than that. It's amazing. And having that superstar is so nice, because it's just like, even the past couple of years when like the Jays weren't good, it's just nice to have a guy that like when fans from like out east or fans from out west, because the Blue Jays are kind of Canada's team, when they come to Toronto and they can go to the Jays game, yeah, even if they stink, at least they get to see Vlad, and maybe they get a chance to see Vlad Guerrero hit a home run. Having a guy like that is so big for the Blue Jays, and to see him now deliver in the playoffs, it's unbelievable. It's storybook.
It's stuff. Really funny, because that's the I went to visit the Montreal Expos once as a kid, and that's the way I felt about his dad. Of like, I don't know what this team is, but I'm going to see Vlad Guerrero, and maybe I'll see him homer.
Right.
And he did, and it was awesome and extremely memorable 25 years later.
Yeah, and for the rest of the time that Vlad's here, let's hope it is for the next, you know, full 14 years, the Blue Jays aren't going to be, you know, a World Series contender every single year. There's going to be teams that are going to be bad, but at the end of the day, hopefully Vlad will be here, and hopefully he'll be hitting home runs, and people from Nova Scotia, people from British Columbia, when they come to Toronto in the summer, can go to a game and see Vlad Guerrero potentially hit a home run.
This is an incredible team, an incredible series, and just continue to do what they did all season upon reaching the playoffs. That includes odd home road splits. Like, they are a solid team on the road. They proved yesterday, do not count them out on the road. Don't just say, okay, 0-2 hole whenever they have to, you know, travel and bank the wins at the Rogers Center. But it is a slightly different team. But with the flip side of that is at home, they're outright dominant. So it's not like good at home, bad on the road. It's passable on the road, incredible at home. Now that we're going to reach a longer series and it's going to be a best of seven, and they are the number one seed, so they're going to have home field. That means first two at home and then 6 and 7 at home as well. Do you trust them moving on and moving forward, even in the American League and the CS and then on to the World Series? Is there an opponent you'd prefer, like Tigers, Mariners? Do you necessarily care, or do you just believe in whatever this is going to transfer to the longer series regardless?
Before I answer that question, let me push back on this home road splits thing. I don't think that's true. I mean, is FanGraphs wrong? Because I'm looking at FanGraphs right now, and in the second half of the season at home, they had a 778 OPS, and on the road, they had an 819 OPS. So is it true that they're that much better at home? I know the record.
It's the record. It's not the splits. It's just they're 54-27 at home, I think. Like that.
But that's like what almost every good team in the majors is like, right, though. This is crazy. And then the Yankee fans, oh, the Jays are cheating. They have to be after game 2. That's all I saw all over Twitter. The Jays have to be cheating. There's no way they're hitting like this. And then they kept hitting like that in the box.
Yeah, we love to tell people they're cheating. It's one of our favorite things to do, because we don't want to examine the fact that maybe everyone is doing some variety of the same thing at this point, including everybody plays better at home. But I'm just saying, I am picking the Blue Jays to have a more than 60% chance to take a 2-0 series lead. I would consider them heavily favored in their home games moving forward. And I'm curious if that view is affected by their opponent for you, or do you just consider big advantage at Rogers Center no matter who we're facing?
I think big advantage of Rogers Center, and in terms of the crowd, this is the dream scenario for the Blue Jays, because I don't know if you know this, but the Detroit Tigers games and Seattle Mariners games, especially Seattle, it's a ton of Blue Jays fans that are there, because Seattle's right below Vancouver. And then, of course, Detroit's right below Toronto. I even think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Mariners, even in their MLB shop, like at the stadium, has a Blue Jays section because they get that many Canadians going to their games. So like this is the dream scenario. It's almost obviously the stadium is going to make a difference in the travel and all that stuff. But it's in terms of fan wise, like it might feel like a home game no matter where it's played and no matter who they play.
Do you have any sort of fear moving forward? Like there's got to be pressure mounting to a certain extent, given the fact that you've made it past the stupid AL East rivals. You are now at, you know, a first time since 2016 in the championship series, semi-rarefied air. There's a temptation to just be like, hey, a little bit of house money now. Like we took out the Yankees, the Red Sox are gone. But at the same time, there's a legitimate championship opportunity on the table here, I feel like. So yeah. How are you balancing the like, wow, that felt really damn good to get the Yankees out of here. But also pressure continues to mount. Like there are legit implications.
Yeah, this it's very rare for a team like Toronto to legitimately have a World Series chance. And this might be the best chance of my lifetime, to be completely honest. Not only that, I've recently moved to Toronto. I'm not going to be living in the city much longer. Like by this time next year, I'll be somewhere outside Toronto. I'm a 20-minute walk to the stadium. I've been to 12 games this year, I think, already. So personally, this means a lot, too. But yeah, I think the vibe from a lot of Jays fans, to be completely honest, and this is going to jinx us, but we're almost kind of already looking to the World Series. Like people are already talking like, oh, the Dodgers are going to be tough, or the Brewers, they're going to be tough. We're kind of looking past the ALCS, if I'm being honest, which is probably going to come back to bite us. But to answer your question earlier, if there is a team I'd rather face between those two teams, it'd be the Tigers, because I'd be scared of the Mariners, because the Mariners also kind of have that team of destiny feel where everything's going right. Cal Raleigh has had that dream season. Also, the rotation scares me a little bit more. Obviously, the Tigers have Skubal, but like they're not going to be able to use him in game one now because they're using him tomorrow night, right? So, and the Tigers' offense second half of the season was atrocious. So to answer your earlier question, the Mariners do kind of scare me, but we are kind of looking past the ALCS. Jays fans as a whole, kind of, not totally. We're not guaranteeing that we're going to win this series. But there are just already talk like, yeah, that win was great. ALCS will be a nice matchup, but like it's going to be tough to beat whoever we face in the World Series.
Are you planning to go to either the CS or the World Series? Like, is it sell a kidney prices or just like sell a toe? Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, tickets went on sale today at 10 a.m. I tried to get in the online queue and I had 90,000 people ahead of me in queue. I don't know if how many of those were bots and how many were real people. I do plan on going to game one. It'll just be the one game that I'll go to. I am going to go to game one. I've looked at tickets. They are expensive. I think they're going to be in like the, well, it obviously depends on where you sit. I think like get in the building price is going to be like 250, which is not terrible. Thankfully, I have been a little hot with most of my betting picks lately. So I'm going to make a little withdrawal thanks to Team USA and or Team Europe and the Ryder Cup. I'll make a little withdrawal from one of my betting accounts and go to the game for that. But I mean, how many times am I going to be able to walk 20 minutes to an ALCS game? Probably never again in my life. So I got to pay up a little bit here. I'm just going to go to one game. I think I'll go to game one.
Yeah, that's why every time I look at the Knicks playoff runs, I say the same thing. And then I go, oh, my God, that is so cost prohibitive. Like, I hate this city. But if I lived in a city like Toronto, I would vastly prefer price wise. I would unequivocally be there, too.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. And I think a Knicks playoff game would probably cost more than a Yankees playoff game.
Then
baseball
Knicks
more,
people
right?
Knicks people hate you. Like Knicks tickets are like $1,000 depending on which round you're looking at.
I imagine getting into a Knicks playoff game would be similar to get into a Maple Leafs playoff game. Yeah. Here Maple Leafs tickets are
beyond. The Knicks do it nice. They do watch parties for you, but if you actually want to go, you gotta hope you know an executive at Chase Bank who can hook you up with
them. Yeah, same with the Maple Leafs. Last year I watched one of their playoff games. They have like an outside the stadium like big screen that you can watch it at, and you can get enter a lottery to get free tickets to that. So that I watched a Maple Leafs game there.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you just one sort of betting question before we exit. You know, Blue Jays fandom aside, how are you forecasting the rest of the postseason, and has your favorite World Series favorite changed at all as the run has gone on?
Great question. I still think I think the Brewers are going to win the World Series. That they were kind of my pick heading into the playoffs. I think they're the only team in the National League that can truly take down the Dodgers. The Dodgers find way to lose in the playoffs, it seems like, more often than not. And if the Brewers play against the Blue Jays, I think that's a bad matchup for Toronto. So, I mean, yeah, Brewers right now still 5-1. I think that's a great price. Brewers are the team that, oddly enough, scares me way more than the Dodgers. Is that crazy?
I don't think it's crazy. It would be a much more deeply fun. I think a lot of people speaking on, the nation of America's behalf would have a lot more fun with Brewers, Blue Jays, and the droughts involved.
People are sick of the Dodgers.
I think they're rightly sick of the Dodgers. And I also just think people who are watching, if the Yankees are eliminated, which they usually are, I'd much rather see a drought broken than crown greatness. Yeah. So no thanks.
Right. Correct. I have that opinion about, every sports. You know, as soon as my team is eliminated, I want to see the team that's on the biggest drought to end up winning. So, because at the end of the day, I'm kind of cheering for fans more than I'm cheering for the players.
100%. It does make it weird. Like, if the Yankees had moved on to face the Mariners, I would be like, yeah, screw you, Seattle. But now that the Yankees are out, it's like, right. I mean, Blue Jays, Mariners, Tigers, there's really no loser American League representative here. That would be fun across the board. There's no team I'm tired of.
Yeah, I think I saw it's the first time since 2015 that it's no Yankees, Astros, or Cleveland in the ALCS.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Love that.
It's been fun, unless you're me. Ian, thank you for stopping by. And I'm happy to – I will always platform a Canadian. And I just hope that next time – maybe things are different. Maybe I'm the one wearing the Built for October shirt. And if the Yankees had a throwback hat, I would be wearing it too. But you've earned the right, and I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Adam. Yeah, let us have this year. Just give me one championship. I've been waiting 32 years my entire life for one of my teams to win once. I just want one championship, and then you Yankees can go back to dominating the AL East.
Handshake deal. I'm down with that. Ian McMillan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining, everybody. Again, usually 3:00 Eastern on every Wednesday with Robert Murray on the stream. Eric Cole and I do a prospect show on Tuesdays. We appreciate everybody joining, watching, listening, and reading us on fansided.com/baseball-insiders. Plenty more great content. And don't forget, we're just under a month from the Silver Slugger Award reveal. That will be happening on this feed as well. November 6th, November 7th, and we're going to have the finalists exclusively for you on Fansided as well. A final word on the New York Yankees before we sign off. I'm sure there were plenty of people on the Yanks Go Yard stream yesterday from Toronto who wanted to listen, and from Boston who wanted to listen. I've done it too. I've been you. I listen to Section 10 after the Yankees eliminated the Red Sox. We got Tyler Milliken's on these streams sometimes. I would not maybe he's here today. I don't know. Shout out to Tyler. He does a great job. I think the thing that should be disturbing to Yankees fans, and I don't know if it is to all Yankees fans, is that you watched a rival, again, diagnose your faults, make fun of your style of play in Buck Martinez, saying this isn't a good team. They make errors. They strike out. And Yankees fans and Aaron Boone tried to rally and said, no, you got it wrong. We are a good team. It's not fair to say we're not a good team. Of course, it was a little bit of an exaggeration to say they're not good. They won a round. They had an incredible comeback. Aaron Judge is the MVP or the runner-up, depending on your viewpoint. But when push came to shove, they could not execute in the postseason. Max Fried and Carlos Rodon could not execute in the postseason. Luke Weaver could not execute in the postseason. Cody Bellinger, Giancarlo Stanton, Austin Wells, Anthony Volpe, Trent Grisham, people you theoretically are counting on, who were a good part of your 162-game offense, could not execute in the postseason. And the New York Yankees, when they lose, they get clowned on. Vlad Guerrero, the Yankees lose. John Schneider said, start spreading the news, bitches, when he eliminated them yesterday. The Yankees are always going to be the kings. That's how it works. They're the most storied franchise in baseball history. When people knock them out, they're going to have fun. They're going to make fun of their traditions. They're going to dance around. They're going to rub it in their faces. So if that's going to happen anyway, then why don't the Yankees try to be the actual legitimate betting favorites entering a postseason or entering a season instead of just being in the mix? One of many very good teams. They've gotten eliminated by the better team through Aaron Boone's entire tenure as manager. And we'll see you on the Baseball Insiders next week and throughout the offseason to sort that out. Thanks.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.